So Shane, 5 of our last 6, we are rolling, my friend.
And 5 power play goals in 2 games. Something's kicking.
Letty and Bailey playing catch here. Bailey charging in. Left it back for Letty. Letty snaps one, scores! The 10th of the season for John Tavares ties it for the Islanders.
And we are back here on the Secondary Assist Podcast. Shane Blackburn alongside Andy Graziano. As always, you could follow me on Twitter at sblackburn26. You could follow him at andygraz_SNY. Andy, I don't even have to look that up anymore. I just know it off the top of my head. I used to write it down on a piece of paper before we started, so I wouldn't have to look it up, but I have it memorized now, so I could just type it in quick and be like, hey, at Andy Graz, blah, 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 hashtag Isles. But before we get started, I would like to send our thoughts and prayers to those affected by the senseless tragedy in New York City today.
Ditto. My thoughts and prayers as well. I hope everyone is safe and hugging their loved ones a little extra tighter this evening.
And we are obviously an Islanders podcast, so we're not going to get into any conversation about it, but I just wanted to send our thoughts and prayers out that way. I guess out that way meaning our own home. I mean, you work in the city, I work in the city, and I live in the 5 boroughs. So thoughts and prayers are with the people who were affected by today's senseless tragedy. But we do have some positive Islanders news to talk about, so let's get into it. As we mentioned, over the past 2 games, they've scored 5 power play goals, which I think puts them dead even for power play goals and shorthanded goals given up.
No, they're actually a plus. Let's see. They're actually, I believe, a +1 now. They've scored 7 power play goals, and they've allowed 6 shorties, so +1.
+1 is better than where we were at coming into this week, so I'll take it.
And I think if you extend that out a little bit, I mean, the Islanders are, you know, 5 for their last 10 on the power play over their last 2 games. If we extend that out to 4 games, they are 6 for their last 18, still a very high percentage.
So things are
starting to trend in the right direction there. I think that on the negative side, you have obviously the shorties to talk about, and you have the fact that they have allowed a power play goal in 4 of their last 5 games. So, you know, always offset positives with negatives, negatives with positives.
Where the penalty kill has historically been what the Islanders are better at than the power play anyway. I guess most teams, but I feel like the penalty kill has always been something that even when the Islanders were struggling, the penalty kill was always something you could look back on and be like, hey, we're on the penalty kill. We're going to have something good going here.
Right.
Exactly. Usually a good momentum builder for them. Especially with guys like Cizikas. Again, in that Cizikas in that Arizona game, killing the 5-on-3 with no glove, with his hand behind his back, was something else.
Yeah, that was sick. We were all kind of amazed at that. And Doug Wade admitted after the game that he was downright frightened by it because, you know, how easy it is to break a finger, break a hand, break a wrist. So Casey showed some guts. And you know what? The reality is he couldn't get off the ice. I mean, especially with the way Arizona was handling the puck on the power play that night. You know, if he would have went off the ice, it would have created a 5-on-3 scenario, even though the bench was in that zone where the Islanders were defending. It would have created a very, very tough situation for the Islanders there. So he did what he had to do.
I think the best part of the whole situation was you saw him look at his glove like, oh, I'm going to go get that, and then realize he couldn't and just got back in the play.
He actually had no glove and no stick. So he had nothing.
He had nothing. He was trying to throw his body at people, and it was fantastic. And then they finally got the clear, and it was just... That was a huge momentum builder in that game also. Not that the Islanders should have needed a momentum builder against Arizona, but that's a different story that we'll get into at a different time. But they, because we want to stay positive for now, because they are playing well, the Minnesota game being the only real stinker. And, I mean, they still scored 4 goals. It's just that they gave up.
The last 2 came in garbage time, so it really was 6. To me, it was more of a 6-2 loss than a 6-4 loss.
And you can't be giving up shorthanded goals and expect to win games like that. And it was just an ugly game. They bounced back, though. They bounced back big with a win against Nashville, who I think is one of the better teams in the league, and especially the Western Conference. They bounced back with a big 6-goal performance there. They bounced back again with a big 6-goal performance against the Vegas Golden Knights, handing them their first road loss in franchise history, a team that I think many people expected to be at the bottom of the Western Conference standings, and instead they're sitting at 8-2. They came into last night 8-1, and the Islanders handed them that second loss. So I think it was a game that I think it was a game they were prepared for. A game where maybe if Las Vegas comes in and they're not 8-1, if they're about what we expected them to be at the beginning of the season, that might go a different way because you might have a letdown from the Nashville game. But they came in, they knew they were playing an 8-1 team, a team that's been playing very well. They do get a little lucky, and Dansk gets taken out of the game because of injury, and they do wind up with a quote-unquote fourth-string goalie making his NHL debut. I don't know how many of those goals an NHL goalie would have stopped anyway, because the Clutterbuck snipe was a ridiculous shot off the wing that went far down. But still, a little bit of luck doesn't hurt anybody. A little bit of, what do we call it in the NHL, PDO?
Right. Well, if you're going to talk puck luck and you're going to talk luck, period, that all points, yeah, to the advanced stat of PDO. But I think that, you know, Vegas has had a lot of that. You know, coming into the game, Vegas's PDO was almost at a ridiculously insane 107, which is basically what PDO is a combination of shooting percentage and save percentage. And anything over 100 is considered, quote unquote, lucky. Anything under 100 is considered not lucky, with 100 obviously being the median. So I think that Vegas was a benefactor of, you know, a very high shooting percentage and a very high save percentage. And I think that when you look at the second half of that game, it's funny when you think of a Vegas team coming in that was 8-1, allowing that many breakaways from like the middle of the second period on. I mean, it was just, it seemed like the Islanders were just getting, you know, breakaway after breakaway. It seemed that way anyway. And I know they had three that I can remember from the middle of the game. The two out of the three they converted, Tavares and Kuhlman, and the other one, Beauvillier, went high and wide shorthanded. But so I think Vegas was a benefactor of a little bit of luck coming in with that 8-1 record. They are a gritty team, but I think last night the Islanders definitely exposed their lack of star power, we'll call it. And as you said, when you get down to your fourth string goaltender, that's obviously a really almost impossible situation for Gerard Gallant and his staff.
And I have a bone to pick with last night's game. And don't,
of course you do.
Please, nobody take this the wrong way. I absolutely love Brendan Burke, and I love Butch, even though he can't figure out anybody's name, and I think it's hilarious. But I love the two of them. I love them on the broadcast. I won't listen to any other broadcast. Did they really think Anders Lee passed the puck off the post to Barzal on that power play goal? Like, the more they said that, the more I was like, You're not being serious, right?
Well, I was in the press box, so I didn't hear the call. But again, from my perspective and from looking at it on the replays on the monitors, it looked to me like Bailey made that pass down to Lee. And that's a patented play that the Islanders, you know, work on, where Lee kind of takes that pass on the side of the post, tries to bring it back around to his forehand and tuck it home. I don't think he really had that option. A, he was in a little too
tight,
yeah. And B, he had, I think, two defenders on him. So I'm not going to say, we didn't get a chance to talk to Anders post game, so I'm not going to say whether it was a designed play or not. It sure as hell looked like it to me, that he actually meant to kind of make that pass through the crease. It's obviously a very high risk, low reward pass. It just happened to work out, but I kind of have a feeling that might have been what he tried to do, knowing or hoping that there was somebody on the other side. And if there was, that someone was going to have a wide open net. Of course, that someone ended up being Matthew Barzal, who continues to get rewarded for his outstanding play. Again, he was buzzsaw last night. Him and ever since Doug Waite played line blender, now that he seems to have some steady lines together, man, that Barzal-Eberle combination has looked really, really good.
I obviously love Tavares, and everyone knows that I've been Bailey's biggest fan pretty much since day one. My favorite line is Barzal, Eberle, Nelson.
Yeah, and Nelson last night got moved down a little bit toward the end of the game. They had him on the third line. They had Beauvillier up there for a little bit with Barzal and Eberle. But if you just look at duos, for instance.
Oh, Barzal, man, and Eberle are
really
fantastic.
Liking Barzal. They're really playing off each other so well. And Matt Barzal is definitely looking like the real deal.
Their styles mesh really well.
Exactly.
But, man. So watching that goal, one thing I noticed about Matt Barzal first is in the first game of the year, he caught the pass on the power play across the ice, I think from Tavares, mm-hmm. and he mm-hmm. took that split second to cock it back, yep. And by the time he shot it, I forget who the goalie was, but by the time he shot it, the goalie got across and made the save. last night, that puck came off that post, and whether it was on purpose or not, I really hope it wasn't, because that's way too high risk of a play for me. Just throw it to the net, and I hope that was an accident. That's way too men's league for me if that was on purpose. But that puck kicked off that post, and it was in the net. There was no hesitation.
Yep.
There was no finesse. It was all-out strength, brute force, shooting the puck towards the net. And that's why that goal went in.
And let's not forget, on his first, yeah, because not for nothing, Derek Engel had actually ended up getting a piece of it.
Right, so if he would have tried to finesse that or just tried to like flip it in, it would have never went in.
And let's not forget, too, Barzal in his first shift in the first period had an excellent shift right off the bat where he rifled one shot just wide of the post and then had another opportunity, which he flubbed with an open net staring him in the face. So, again, he continues to be really active, growing in confidence every game, and definitely looking like that year, that extra year he spent in Seattle, whether it did him good or did him bad, he's proving to be an NHL-caliber player right now.
So for me, so far this season, Barzal has jumped Hossang, Beauvillier, and Dalcol. He is the 1A prospect for this team.
Absolutely.
He's going to be a star.
We have to see how Dalcol, you know, this is a really big development year for Dalcol.
Yes.
It's his second year as a pro with the Sound Tigers under Brent Thompson, and going to be a really, really big year. I'm really looking for big positive steps from him this year. If not, I think you got to consider knocking him down maybe to Tier B in the Islander prospect pool. Hossang, everything I'm hearing from Bridgeport has been positive in terms of attitude and work ethic. And
he did score on his first shift in his first game down there.
I just don't at this point, you know, with the Islanders over their last five games averaging almost five goals a game, 4.83 to be exact, I believe. I don't see a quick return for Josh because, let's face it, I really can't see Doug Wade jumbling what's working.
Speaking of what's working, I could admit when I may have overstated something. I won't admit I was wrong because I can't pinpoint that Ryan Pulock is the linchpin that started off this five for the last 10 power plays. But I will admit that he has made a difference on the power play, and you can see it when not only when he gets his shot off, but when he doesn't, because you can see the penalty kill shades towards him, and that opens up other people on the power play. But the one thing I was definitely wrong about was I was expecting awful five-on-five defensive shifts. And while he hasn't done anything to stand out as a Nick Leddy-type defenseman, he has not been noticeable either. He hasn't been noticeable either way. For me, he one or two snafus, but I mean, Calvin DeHaan passed the puck to a Golden Knight in front of the net last night. Everyone has their snafus. He hasn't had anything out of the ordinary that I would sit back and say, oh, you can't have him on the ice.
He's been more than,
I wouldn't even consider him a sixth defenseman. He can come in right now for me and take a spot in this lineup. A, what he does add to the power play, and B, what he has shown in these two games, five on five.
Yeah, I'm not really ready to take that leap just yet. I think that he's still a rotation defenseman for me right now. Again, he does seem to be getting a little bit more comfortable, given that the last couple of games he's gotten a regular shift on D and not that rotating shift that he played when he made his debut at the Garden against the Rangers. But for me, I'm still, his five-on-five shifts, I agree, are meh. You know, some are good, some are not so good. I agree with you, there's really been nothing egregious about his play. I don't know how much of the power play success lately you can credit directly to him. He does have the one power play goal on a blast. But other than that, I really haven't, you know, I mean, what the Islanders need to continue doing on that power play, it's all about the zone entry. And there's only a couple of guys that should be in charge of the zone entry. It's that simple.
But what I will say about that, Andy, is when a couple of penalty killers go to your zone entry guy, I trust Pulock carrying the puck into the zone, which is something I didn't know if I was going to or not.
Yeah, I still don't, but that's fair.
But two games, when he had the puck coming in on the power play, I wasn't like, oh, here we go, another clear. I was like, all right, we'll get it in.
You know, what we've seen is that Matthew Barzal or John Tavares, obviously with his ridiculously high skill level, should probably be the only two that are entering the zone in control on the power play. Those are the only two that should be doing that. Them and I mean, you could obviously throw Letty into there. I apologize. You could definitely put Letty in there. So Letty, Tavares, or Barzal should be the only three handling the puck on the zone entry on the power play, period. That's it. And if they continue to do that, they're going to continue to have success because, let's face it, as we said, I believe on last week's show, there is a crap ton of skill on that power play. So the drought that they went through at the beginning of the year, and Josh Bailey said to us last night, it's kind of, you know, teams go through droughts on special teams all the time, he said, but it's kind of magnified because it was a longer drought and it was right at the beginning of the season and it did cost him some points. So he said it's a little bit magnified in that sense. But I think that, you know, the struggles started getting just unexplainable to me with the amount of talent that was out there. I mean, we obviously saw the reluctance to shoot and we saw the lack of movement. We saw those things. And with the skill level out there, it was just amazing to me where it got to a point where I was just like, I don't even know what the hell to say anymore about it.
I don't even know what to say about it. I don't even know how to respond to that.
It was such a great worded statement, analytical.
It was.
Yet factual.
And I
kind of had a little bit of everything thrown in there.
I didn't want to go back at it at all.
That's what I dressed up today for, as for Halloween, somebody who actually knows what the hell they're talking about. That was my costume. So I'm still in costume, as you can tell.
I was in costume today too. I went to work as someone who hates working in the city.
Someone who hates work, period.
I just walked around with a puss on my face. I thought it was funny.
That's pretty good. That's a pretty good costume. I like that one.
But so something I wanted to get into, because there are still some negatives we can talk about the Islanders. They're obviously not perfect.
Nope.
No team is perfect. I mean, the closest team to perfect, we played them last night and beat them. So there are no perfect teams. But for all the negative that was spoken about the past couple of weeks for the Islanders, they're 7-4-1.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm stealing this from Arthur Staple. I'm sure everyone who listens to the podcast knows who he is, but just in case, he's the Islanders beat writer for Newsday. You follow him at Stape Newsday, but he tweeted this out last night. The Islanders didn't win their seventh game until mm-hmm. November 28th last season.
Wow.
And that made them 7-10-4.
Mm-hmm.
And Tavares scored in that game his sixth goal.
Yeah, the start that they wanted is now becoming a reality. Again, at 7-4-1, that gives them 15 of 24 possible points. That's a pretty darn good percentage. That's a playoff team percentage right there after 12 games. And like I said, they definitely wanted a better start, and that combined with the stat that Arthur tweeted out last night proves that they right now are working on the start that they wanted.
That's 62.5% of the points
they
would have gotten.
And that's about what you need to make the playoffs.
Yeah,
you need about. You're about bottoming out at that 60 to 61%. You're just barely on the fringe. So 62, 63% is the right range, I think, for a playoff team, and that's where they're at right now. Can they, you know, they just have to continue moving forward. They have to continue the momentum. They have to continue doing the right things on the power play, because again, it's going to be a special teams league, at least until the referees decide in the middle of the season that they don't want to call by the rule book anymore. And they put their whistles away. Right now they're going by the book. We've seen this all the time when they change up rules. We've seen the referees get really, really strict about it. And then the middle of the year goes back to the way that we've always seen, and the whistles go in the pocket and they start to let more stuff go.
It usually doesn't even take till the All-Star break. It usually even happens before that.
Yeah, like January time around. It's usually when that happens for me. And it's, you know, it sucks to see, because you'd like to see it called consistently throughout. But, you know, and then you get playoff officiating, which is a totally other ladder, a totally different animal that, you know, it's just all hands on deck. It's like playing pond hockey at that point. It's just like survival of the fittest.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, survivor on ice with razor blades on your feet and a piece of lumber in your hands.
Speaking of pond hockey, I hate when the Islanders are in it because it's not good for my heart, but 3-on-3 overtime is amazing to watch when you don't care about who wins.
I just wish it would end there.
Yeah. So EJ Raddick from NHL Network tweeted out something about how great 3-on-3 mm-hmm. overtime is. And I had to respond. You know, I had to respond because I have to respond to everything on Twitter because that's how I am. I was like, yeah, but that's why I hate the shootout, because the shootout ruins
right.
What is, the for me, the perfect overtime.
If you get through a 60-minute NHL game and you're even with your opponent, all right, then you go to a 5-minute 3-on-3, which is essentially just like you said. It's like playing pond hockey with five of your buddies and throwing your sticks in the middle, turning your back, and somebody just throwing sticks to the left and throwing sticks to the right, and that's your team. And I think at that point, if you've made it to that point at the 65-minute mark and you're still even with your opponent, geez, just give each team a point and move on with your day.
I have no problem with a tie. No problem with a tie.
I don't get it. I know, you know, there's a lot of fans out there that obviously love the shootout, but it's BS, man. It's crap. It's a glorified. It totally takes the team out of the game. It then becomes you know, an individualistic skills competition to determine who gets the extra point.
You know what I compare it to? It would be like if at the end of an overtime in football, you just lined up the two kickers and whoever missed first lost.
Yep, it's ridiculous.
I don't like it, but the 3-on-3 overtime is absolutely fantastic.
I agree with that.
Now, I did want to get into something else. You mentioned it a little bit earlier, but it didn't seem right to transition into it yet, so let's do it now. It's not just the 5-for-10 power play that's been helping this team. I do think it was the Doug Weight line blender. We can't call it the Cappy line blender anymore. But the Doug Weight line blender has seemed to help. It seems to have sparked more than just one person. Tavares has like a million goals in the past four games.
I think a million is accurate.
What is it? I think it's eight, right? He has eight in the last four games. He's got 3-3-2.
Two hat tricks and a two-goal effort last night.
So, because he was held off the board in Minnesota, right? If I recall correctly. So he's got eight goals in essentially three games, even though they played four in that time span. But I think a big part of this was the return of Josh Bailey to that line. And I know we're going to get flack for that, and I'm just waiting for the Twitter responses tomorrow.
You know what? We can't get flack for that because it's an irrefutable statistical fact right now.
But I mean, Josh Bailey, so we're going to. I'm just anticipating the ats tomorrow that are going to come in when this comes out.
Forget that, Groff. At the end of the second period in the Minnesota game is when Josh Bailey went back on the line with John Tavares. They produced a goal in that period, Bailey getting an assist. They were then together for the last two games, the win over Nashville and the win last night. Bailey continues to just rack up assists. And don't give me this, enough with this secondary assist crap. Enough with it.
Okay.
It's over.
And this is not just because it's Josh Bailey. This is a belief I've held for a long time when it comes to hockey. And it's an argument I have at work with the NBA a lot. To me, a lot of times, the secondary assist is more important than the primary assist because you're making that play happen.
Now, let's break it down. Let's break that down, what you just said, to Tavares' first goal last night. Right? Josh Bailey picks up the puck on the right wing boards in around the faceoff circle, does a nice spin move to clear himself of the defender, makes a nice pass out to the point to Nick Leddy. Nick Leddy, John Tavares deflection, goal. Without that play by Bailey, which went down as a secondary assist, quote unquote, the goal never happens.
And again, it's not just because it's Josh Bailey. I would say this if it was literally anybody getting the secondary assist.
A lot
of times, yes, the primary assist often is looked at as the most important because you're making that primary pass. But a lot of times, your pass doesn't happen if you don't get the puck from the original play.
Let's just play devil's advocate and say that on Cal Clutterbuck's goal, for instance, he makes a really, really nice play, a nice chip play at center ice, right, to spring himself. Let's just say that after Clutterbuck makes that chip play, that he drops it back to Cizikas, and then Cizikas passes to Kuhlman, and Kuhlman puts it in. Statistically, Clutterbuck gets a secondary assist on that.
Even though he's the reason it happened.
Exactly. He's the driver of the whole play with his chip play at center ice.
That was a hell of a chip play, by the way.
And a hell of a shot.
That was an all-around. Yeah. So,
And a hell of a tumble, too. One that would have surely ended my life. My life.
We'll get back into the lines in a second. I do just want to say about last night's game. Is I called the win the minute Ladd scored because it was the same kind of situation as the St. Louis game earlier in the year at Barclays where we went down and Ladd scored almost the same exact goal off the wall.
Yeah, I think Ladd made a really nice play. I mean, well, I'm not sure if he specifically waited for Casey Cizikas to do a flyby screen, but if he did, it was a ridiculously awesome play by both players. Cizikas crossing in front of Ladd, temporarily blinding Dansk, and then at the moment that was happening, Ladd with a near perfect shot. And that whole play kind of just was really just a perfect play when you think about it. And Ladd seems to be a lot more comfortable this year. He's obviously healthy, has a little bit more jump in his legs. Back feels good, and he's obviously showing what kind of player he can be. And it's also showing just how hurt he was the first half of last season.
Now, I didn't mean to sidetrack this, so let's get back to Bailey and Tavares, because it is something I want to talk about. It's something I know you wanted to talk about coming into tonight. And I understand that a lot of fans didn't want to see Josh Bailey on the line with Tavares. They wanted, especially when the Islanders went out and traded for Jordan Eberle, which, by the way, Edmonton already hates Ryan Strome. But that's a different story. But I know a lot of fans didn't want to see Bailey on that line. They wanted to see Eberle there. They want that elite winger. Well, right now, Josh Bailey is playing like an elite winger. There is nothing you could take away from that. I was praying the other night that Lee would have scored the goal. It was the Nashville game. Bailey made an incredible move in the slot and passed the puck across to Lee, and Lee just couldn't finish it. I was praying Lee would have finished that so we could have watched that move over and over and over again, because to me, Josh Bailey went home last offseason, and he went right onto EASports.com, and he bought all of their like power-up coins, and then dumped them all into his own stick handling skill in the game.
Right,
because he's always been good with the puck, and to me, he's always been a smart player, minus that he'll never shoot, but that's a different story also. But all of a sudden, he came into this season with an incredible set of hands, and I don't know where they came from, but they are helping him immensely.
Right. Yeah, I think that's pretty accurate, Shane. I think that I think just overall, the team's just firing on a lot of good cylinders right now. And I like what I'm seeing on a lot of different levels. But Josh Bailey to that line, look, they had tremendous chemistry last year. You know, Bailey comes up with a career year in points. And let's not forget, before Josh Bailey was put back on the John Tavares line in the third period of that loss in Minnesota, he had, 9 points before that?
Yeah,
he was producing without Tavares, and now it's just flourishing with Tavares.
And now the team's leading scorers are that first line. JT has 15
Correct.
Points, Bailey has 14, and Lee has 12. Now, right. I get one of the issues with Bailey is he doesn't shoot. He only has 3 goals. Fine. But when you have 11 assists, does that matter?
6th in the NHL in assists, and you know what? He will continue to not shoot.
when you're creating at that pace, and when you're creating at that level, you don't need to shoot all the time. Now, there is going to come a point where defensemen and goalies are going to start to cheat towards the pass, and that's when you're going to see Bailey start to put in some goals, and his goal numbers are going to catch up. But for now, if you're creating, and if you have Anders Lee, who's one of the more underrated scorers in the league, and John Tavares, who according to NHL.com is the best player in the league this week, on your line, you don't need to shoot. You have your two finishers right there.
I'll take 15, 40, 55, or 15, 45, 60 every...
I'll take 10.
Every day of the week.
I'll take 10 and 50 if you can give it to me. I don't care.
Right.
And I'm a little biased. I never shot the puck either. I always would... I would end seasons with, 7 and 75. Warrant it. I had a goal scorer on my line who was, the Tavares of our league. I could just give him the puck and he would score. It was fantastic for me. But I would end seasons with, 5 times the number of assists that I had goals, and I never cared. We still scored. That's how Josh Bailey plays to me. That's what I see when I see him on the ice. He sees the game well. He plays defense. He's one of the only forwards that plays a consistent defensive presence in our own zone, and he's fantastic at it. And I think that takes a lot of pressure off of Tavares in the own zone. He knows Bailey's going to be there making the smart play, which allows him to try and be more offensive coming out of the defensive zone. I think that's a big thing, too. But you spoke to both John Tavares and Josh Bailey last night after the win against Las Vegas at home. And let's start with Bailey. This is what Bailey had to say about playing on the same line with JT.
I don't know. Sometimes you just mesh well together with guys. Obviously, when you got Johnny down the middle, he's a huge threat at all times. And Anders brings a great element to the line as well. He's always doing a lot of the dirty work, and I think it just meshes well, and it's been fun.
I think that's a little humble. You just mesh well. Well, I don't think he's giving himself enough credit there.
You know, there's really not an answer for the question I asked him, right? I mean, you know, I asked him, you know, you're back on Johnny's line now. Obviously, you had a career year last year, and you seem to be picking up right where you left off this year. What is it about it? What is it about that chemistry that makes you two guys work so well? So it's really, it is a tough question to answer, admittedly, but again, it was something that I had to ask. And then I went over to the captain, and I asked the captain a similar question, and here's how he responded.
Yeah, Josh is a heck of a player. You know, doesn't get enough credit, and not just his offensive ability, which is really flourishing, but his all-around game. And to win games and to be a successful team, you need guys like Josh, his secondary scoring for years, and he's really grown into a great leader in the locker room. A lot of young guys really look up to him, and been a lot of fun for me to play with him. He's a good friend, it's fun when you're having success, create opportunities, and he makes that part of the game easy.
Doesn't get enough credit. Right from the captain's mouth. Interesting quote.
You want to know what the most interesting part of that quote for me was? I'll play it again in another couple of seconds if you guys want to hear the full thing again. But good for the young kids on the team.
Yep.
Bailey does more than just produce. And this year, he's also producing. That's been my thing with Josh Bailey. Josh Bailey has underproduced for where he was drafted. There's no doubt about that. You can't argue that. That's statistically factual. For where he was drafted and the expectations that were placed on him, he has underproduced based on what I think people were expecting from him. You can't argue that. That I understand. But
agreed.
He's added the intangibles to his game. He plays good defense. He's apparently a good locker room guy, which I know that doesn't get enough credit either throughout the whole sport, but that's a different story. But he might have underproduced in the beginning, but he has developed into a quality NHL player. Maybe he's not a first liner on every NHL team across the league, but you know what? He's our first line left wing. He's producing with John Tavares, and him and Lee with JT are an offensive powerhouse, apparently, that teams have to game plan for, which opens the door for the other three lines.
Abso-frickin-lutely. Couldn't have said it better myself.
Won't apologize for my Josh Bailey love. Deal with it.
No, it's fine. On that note, we're just about coming up on 30 minutes here.
Yes,
actually.
We are. Anything you want to say in closing before we head out for the week?
Just think, you know, they got to keep it going, man. I know that's kind of cliche and you hear it a lot, but we got Washington Thursday and Colorado Sunday. You know, obviously this isn't the Washington start that they wanted. And then after Colorado, you have a couple of other winnable games coming in with Edmonton and a struggling Dallas Stars team in Dallas. Before they head to the road, it's actually a back-to-back. They'll be in Dallas and St. Louis, but Washington, Colorado, Edmonton, Dallas, the next four. Opportunity to pick up some major points there.
You said it perfectly, and they have an opportunity here to match their longest win streak of the year, three games. They have that opportunity Thursday. The only thing I don't like is they're playing well. They've got five wins in their past six games. They're playing very well, and now we're playing Thursday and then Sunday. We have a couple of days off, which I guess is good, gives you a little bit of rest, but when you have this kind of momentum going, I'm a little upset we're not. I wish we were turning around playing tomorrow night. Yep. You want to keep that momentum rolling, especially. They've gone, so starting with the Ranger game on the 19th, they went 4 goals, 5 goals, 5 goals, 6 goals, 6 goals, 6 goals. Mm. That's the kind of momentum you want to carry forward throughout the season. You don't want to take a 3 or 4 day break now and then play again. You want to carry that momentum forward, especially that seemingly in the beginning of the season, part of the reason for some of the losses were the inability to finish and the inability to score goals. Now, one of those games is a loss, the 4-goal game against Minnesota, but still, they put up 4 goals in that game. Like, they're producing. You don't want to have a 3-day layoff here and then another 3-day layoff before you play again.
Well, we'll see what happens, but at the end of the day, it's time to just keep things rolling here.
I got one question for you before we get out.
Another question?
Ryan Strome get a video tribute on Tuesday, November 7th?
I'm going to say no.
I'm going to assume he's not going to be in the lineup.
Fair enough.
And I already bought my ticket for Sunday, February 11th to see the return of the Hammer, because you know he's going to get a video tribute. I'm really excited to see Hamonic come back to Barclays Center. Sunday, February 11th, that's a 7 p.m. game. Calgary comes in for their only game at Barclays, and I already got my ticket for that because I want to see that. And by that, I mean my parents get six additional tickets in their like partial season ticket plan, and I told them, use one of those for me to get a ticket to Sunday, February 11th.
Beauty.
Because I'm cheap.
Nice work. Nice work.
Oh, but thank you guys for listening to this week's episode of the Secondary Assist Podcast. Again, I'm Shane Blackburn. He's Andy Graziano. Follow us on Twitter at sblackburn26, at andygraz_sny, at secondarypod for the podcast itself. Until next week, we are the Secondary Assist Podcast.